Talking there to Mataya Matariki, it is the time to do some reflection, to think about, you know, where we've come, more importantly, where we're going. And I tell you, my next guest, my goodness, he could tell us where he has been in the last few months, but more importantly, where he might have to go in the future. I want to welcome my dear friend, good friend to all of us in Radio Wātea Land, Matthew Tukaki. Kia ora, my friend Matthew.
Oh, kia ora, kwando. I could sing you all night. I could sing a song all night. But it's great to be with you, mate, and also just listening to you two talk on Nonata, the centre of the universe. Oh, go on. I think the only other person that might agree with you would be Wally Homaha.
Well, that's right. Well, he's just down the road.
Yeah.
Hey, well, all the big wigs will be there on Thursday, that's for sure. But yep. Listen, look, I just want to say welcome back, Matthew, to Radio Wātea, because you haven't been on, I know, since your unfortunate health event. And can we talk about that, or would you rather not? Because that was significant.
No. That's what I'd love to talk about, actually, because I think this is the opportunity. Great. I think the opportunity is for Māori males in particular to heed the call, the lesson, and go and get themselves checked out, because you don't want to be like me and wait until the ambulance carts you off to the hospital, lying flat in the back of the gurney, thinking, oh no, is this it? And I think we not only owe it to ourselves, we owe it to our whānau. More so than anything else, we owe it to our loved ones that we can be here just a little bit longer. Although I would strongly stress upon my little bit longer medipeka, I'm sure there are a few people lining up to go to Maitangi.
so was that medical event that serious? Was it?
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah,
okay.
It was really serious. I believe my whānau were told. So what happened was I was in Australia speaking at a conference on behalf of my mahi. I felt something was wrong in the morning, and I could see words jumping all over the screen on a Teams meeting I was having, and then I collapsed. But I think I did a couple of things right. The first thing I did right was listen to my nan. She must have been talking to me from the beyond. And I remember her always saying, make sure you got clean undies on, boy, just in case you go out. but even though by that stage I collapsed in my home office, and this is overseas when this happened, and I crawled into the room, and I made sure I had a clean t-shirt and clean shorts and undies on. But the third thing I did was, and this is critical because timing is everything. So I'll jump to straight away. I mean, I had a stroke. I had an aneurysm and a heart attack all at the same time, and I'm dealing with some health issues at the moment, like an aortic dissection. They had no idea what that even was. So it was about as serious as it gets. But the third thing I did really well, apart from put the washing on, was I crawled to the front door and I arched my body in between the door and the door frame just in case the ambulance people couldn't get in. And the last thing I felt was literally the ambulance, New South Wales ambulance driver or paramedic, pull me up by the back of the shorts, and that was it. I was gone. And it wasn't until many, 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 many weeks later that I woke up in the hospital in the ICU, and all these tubes were pushing out of my head, and oh my goodness, it was brutal. But it wasn't until recently that I discovered that I was in the 20% survival rate. That's the chance of survival for me, and my whānau had all arrived from New Zealand. My little brother Michael, and my big sister H, my mum, my way better brother. I don't know how any of them put up with me, but there they were when I woke up. The best thing that could have happened is when I woke up, I saw all those familiar faces, but I saw the look on my mum's face, and I thought, oh, I'm so sorry to have done this to you, mum. That's what happened. And then as soon as I could, I tailed it back to New Zealand, because the last thing I wanted to do is stay in Australia any longer than I had to. And so I made my way home on a medevacuation flight, on a commercial flight. And then I got into Hutt Hospital. And that's when I started to understand the severity of the situation I found myself in. Because, you know, this is blood pressure territory, it's heart territory, cardiovascular, it's all of the things that prevent Māori males from living long and productive lives. And so that's what happened. That's the long and the short of it. And now I'm on the full road of recovery. But when I woke up, Midipeka, I couldn't see. I couldn't hear in my right ear. So it affected the right side of my body, but the left side of my body is where the impact is. So I woke up with no to little feeling in the left side of my body. So I've had to learn to walk again, play the guitar again, drink beer again, which apparently I'm pretty good at. Apparently I'm pretty good at that last one. Mind you, I was always pretty good at it. But that's that. So I'm having to learn everything again through using my but the, and the smallest of tasks, sorry to ramble a little bit, but even my speech, you might notice that I'm slurring my words a bit, but I've had to learn to talk again.
Well, I noticed that I did speak to you a month or so ago, Matthew, and your speech has greatly improved just in this month and this in the last few weeks. It is. Look, Matthew, is there anything, were there any indications that this could have been avoided? Was it avoidable? I mean, did you usually get your annual or, you know, biannual health checkup? Anything that could have been done differently?
No, I would say that I ran with the dogs and hunted with the hounds. So my thing was always work, get out there and do stuff and all the rest of it. And actually the first indicator should have been my dad. My dad died of an aneurysm at the same age I was, or am right now. So I don't think it runs in the family so much so as it does it run in Māori males, and Pacifica males in particular. Our issue with cardiovascular disease. And so I think that all the signs, you know, hindsight's wonderful, eh? You look back and you think, oh, I should have done this, I should have done that, or go on. I should have won a lotto, but I didn't. I mean, as those tuponer of mine who when I crossed over to the other side, not one of them gave me the lotto numbers, and the Powerball was 15 million that weekend. I thought I was, you buggers, go on. But yeah, just to come back to you, the signs are all there. The signals are there, and my signs are no different to anybody else's. But what I'm more so determined than ever before is to. I mean, I'm only a relatively young person. Well, mind you, I'd say that even if I was 90, I'm still a relatively young person. Māori males, or Māori in particular, have a lower life expectancy than our non-Māori counterparts. So the question isn't about whether I saw the science so much as what can we do now as a collective to ensure that we actually bridge that gap of life expectancy? How can we live longer, more healthier and productive lives? And that's the journey I'm on at the moment.
Yeah, and I guess really talking about that, Matthew, you know, we need to start way earlier, way younger as well. Just to say right through life, we should be preparing ourselves to live longer. And so the earlier we start, the better that our habits will become entrenched, it will become embedded and make them good habits. It's about knowing what to do, and it's about forming those good habits and then being consistent in them as well, isn't it? Because we don't want to get to old age and then be decrepit and then, not having a joyful life. I actually love to think that we should be having a joyful life whenever our numbers start up. Mm-hmm. We should be trying to live life to the max.
I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, I would love the opportunity to retire. I would love to take the superannuation from the tax man. But, you know, the reality is that we as a people, you've hit the nail on the head. We could be leading longer, more productive lives, and we do have to start earlier. How we shape our future is what we did in our past. And as a child, I mean, there are all sorts of things as a teenager I probably wouldn't have done. In my 20s, I had a great time in my 20s, but I now know the partying and the good times and the rock and rolling and goodness knows what have all played a role in what's happened to me today. And so my love of the pork bones in the pot, the fried bread, you name it, I've loved it, I've enjoyed it. But there comes a time when you've got to settle down, and if you want to live just that, you know, even an extra couple of years, there are things that we can do. Like, for example, sugar. Cutting out the sugar, getting rid of that crap. Now, I lost more than 40 kilos last year. But also listening, I've got to use my ears to listen more about about the professionals saying to me, oh, Matt, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that. I should be listening more. I've got that Māori male in me, eh? I know the truth of my situation. You fellas don't get to tell me what to do. Oh, go on.
Well, I suppose the other thing too is I've heard it said so often that we are where we are today as a result of the actions that we have taken. And so, you know, I mean, I know it's nice sometimes to say, oh, well, I didn't know this, or, you know, nobody told me, but really most times now we know what's good for us. And because, you know, we know now that smoking is a danger to our health. We know that we should be exercising. We know that we should drink in moderation, says she who enjoys her wine so much. But, you know, those are the things we know. And so I guess where we are, and it doesn't matter whether it's your health or not, actually, Matthew, you know, even with your jobs, with our work, we are where we day because of the actions that we have taken. So it's accepted accountability for our health and then doing something about it.
Well, that's my new catch call now. If it's got to be, it's up to me. And you talk about your love of the wine. I mean, I built the wine barrel. You know, so, I mean, I think in all honesty, but I still don't regret anything I've ever done. But what I have realised is that now there is a life after what's happened to me. Sadly, it's a life of different challenges now. So just putting on the jug takes time. Filling the jug up and putting it on for a cup of tea when I have visitors in my house now. It's a heavy jug. I never felt the heaviness of a jug of water before, really, when you think about it. Right through to opening the shampoo bottle with my hand. My fingers that don't quite work the way they used to. And so I've got a deeper appreciation for our tangata whaikaha, our Māori with disabilities, and also the reality that a lot of our people do suffer that disability in silence. And so what can we do more to give a voice to them? And in fact, one of the other things I would say, before I digress, to me, to Kira Puketapu. Now, Mr. Puketapu, the grand old man of the Māori public service, was one of the last people I saw when I was in Hutt Hospital. He was in Hutt Hospital with me. I mean, I was around the corner, so I walked around to see Mr. Puketapu, who was on the same ward as me, the OPRS ward at Hutt Hospital. And I walked through the door and I saw the man himself and I threw off the shackles of my Zimmer frame that I had to, because I couldn't walk at that stage. And I wanted to enter that room to say hello to him that day. And he looked at me, and of course, we all know what his challenges were towards the end of his life, and he sadly passed away, and his tangi was today. But he looked at me, and he saw my dad. He said to me, "Is that you, Winter?" Because my father's name was Midwinter.
Oh, my
strange,
God.
Strange. I know. So he looked at me, and there was this cheeky grin in his eye, and I had a cheeky smile on my face, and I thought, well, if this is what has happened to me, and I get to say hello to this man, then that is a good day, and this is a good life. I reflect on all of that, and I think to myself how lucky and privileged I actually am.
Well, I know when you said now that you appreciate the experience of those who are living, you know, who have lived experience in areas of health that have been very challenging for them. Because, Matthew, before my late husband passed away, he was in a wheelchair for a couple of years. And, you know, earlier, I used to think, oh, you know, putting these wheelchair ramps and everything, what a bloody waste of money. Look, I can tell you, once you get somebody in a wheelchair and you're pushing them up and uphill and down dale, I was so thankful. And I thought, never voice an opinion until you absolutely have gone in and seen the benefits and had the lived experience or talked to people with the lived experience, because it's most unfair that those who have challenges with their health, and if we can help them in any way to get access to buildings, to have better care, then surely that's what we want for our fellow citizens.
That's right. And I think one of the biggest things we can actually do is take time to listen to what they're saying. They're not asking for much. They're not asking for buckets and screeds of cash or anything like that. They're asking for basics. And they're actually asking for us just to understand the situation they find themselves in. They don't need to be talked to. They need to be listened to. And that's one of the biggest struggles.
It is. It is. Now, Matthew, so the prognosis for you, say from now until Christmas, is it looking good? I mean, I know you were saying that before you know, you're here, what is it, one side of your face, I think, and now you can speak well and you're regaining your mobility in terms of, you know, moving your legs and that. And I've seen, and I have seen, and I can see that, you know, there's a bit of a struggle going on there with your limbs, trying to get them to coordinate. And
I can't rock and roll like I used to. So although that little brother of mine can. The prognosis is whatever I believe it is going to be. And I fundamentally believe that this is not the end of my journey. And to be honest with you, the challenge ahead is still tough. But, you know, I've never shied away from it. And I think it's a privilege, rather than a disappointment, I find myself in a very privileged position of now having both a deeper understanding of what happens in the life of somebody who is affected by this sort of thing, but also the ability to push the big green reset button and think, do I really need to be doing and acting and behaving the way I have been? Or is this my opportunity just to reset, to re-coordinate and to rebalance my life? So I'm 48 years old now. I reckon I've got another 50 in me. And so what do I do for the next half of my life? And I think that's where I'm at.
Well, I think that's great, because you just said, you know, do I have to be doing these things that I've been doing in the past? You know, that means you could have been a right little cretin.
I was.
Yeah, well, there you go. But listen, I was just saying before when I came on here, somebody gave me these little cards that you sometimes pop up on your desk. And so I've just flipped over the next one to see what tomorrow's going to bring. And do you know what it is? It says today, which is obviously going to be tomorrow. Today is the only day that matters. And how true is that? How true is that?
That's right. My biggest thing, if it's got to be, it's up to me in this next part of the journey. And Matariki, you know, the theme and message of Matariki this year of reconnecting, I tell you, there is nothing like having reconnected with my whānau and to appreciate them as much as I have with them being on this journey with me. I mean, I can't believe that little brother of mine who complains up and down Dale about anything around, you know, bloody whatever. He's been right there by my side. My sister Rachel just rang me all the way from Malaysia. She's over there for work, and she checks in on me. She comes around. She makes the bed. She does all sorts of stuff. And Mum, who is just so funny, she can't stand being in a hospital longer than 10 minutes.
I think it must have been a worry for them, though, Matthew. They must have been worried.
It was. But Medipicker, I think the message for me is quite simple. Whānau, and particularly for our Wahine Māori out there, you have the keys to the car. The keys to the car are your man's heart. Get him to the doctor. Get his blood pressure checked. Get him, don't do it for now. Do it every 6 months, every 12 months, at least minimum once a year. Get him to that whole order. I mean, the destiny of the Māori Health Authority is the aspiration. The destiny is here. That's us. So come on, let's all go and get a checkup.
Can I just ask you again, the three things that you had, because it was three. I'm just going to write them down, because I just want to make sure I'm going to tell somebody that I know. That, oi, come on. So you had.
It started with the aneurysm. So that's when a shot of blood hits you in the head. I had a stroke and a heart attack, otherwise also called what we call an aortic dissection, which is a tearing of my aorta. And then I've got a few other bits and pieces which I'm not willing to talk about tonight that I'm going through at the moment too, which is all related. So one flows from the other. They are the three things: aneurysm, stroke, and heart attack.
God. And, you know, as you said before, when you first came on, Matthew, there's usually only a 20% survival rate. So you've beaten that, and you'll go to beat the odds in all of these other areas. But listen, I just want to say, I'm sure our listeners out there would have just loved, because hearing that you're well, and secondly, that you have beaten the odds in terms of the 20% survival rate. But it's good for them to know that, you know, all of these things, my God, combined. Well, look, hey, listen, if we're being absolutely honest, Matthew, one of those could have taken a person out, you know, a lesser person. So it's just great that you've been able to survive, be able to focus on the things that you need that really matter from now on. And just really great, Matthew, that you've taken the opportunity to talk to us and to tell it as it is, because you're right. Our men, we want them. They're our husbands, our lovers, our fathers, our brothers, cousins, uncles. you know, the whole lot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And congratulations to you and your fight ahead in October.
Fucking hell.
And whenever I can be back at Wātea, I'll be there in a heartbeat. All right, you fellas, take care. I better go now.
Thank you so much, Matthew. It was great to talk with you. Thank you.